This is Pillow Talk, brought to you by Killer and a Sweet Thing. I'm Eileen Kelly.
And I'm Jacob Safarian. On this podcast, we normalize sexual experiences by allowing the people who live them to speak for themselves.
On today's episode, we're joined by sex surrogate Dr. Lori Bennett Cook. Lori is a clinical sexologist and surrogate partner therapist living and working in the Los Angeles area. Welcome to Pillow Talk. For our viewers who may not know, what is sex surrogacy?
So sex surrogacy is a term that many people use to describe surrogate partner therapy. Surrogate partner therapy is a term that's not as well known just because the name sex, the word sex, is not in the title and it's easier to Google, find whatever, sex, anything. Surrogate partner therapy was started by Masters and Johnson way back in the day when they were trying to find and have couples find ways to work together and grow intimate skills and be able to conquer concerns around premature ejaculation. Ejaculation or delayed ejaculation or inability to orgasm, whether it's for vaginismus or any other myriad of issues. For those people that came to see Masters and Johnson that didn't have a partner, they hired sex workers to partner with them. And they found that the results with those that had sex workers working with them, hence surrogate partners working with them, were as good of results as those who had actual partners. So they began the surrogate partner program, which is still going on today.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what does, you know, surrogate partnership look like today?
Yeah. So it's fascinating because clients come to me with any level of concerns, whether, like I said, it's premature ejaculation. Let's just use that as an example. And it could be because it's something that's been chronic. It could be acute. It could be because of a recent disability or shyness or, you know, fear, whatever the issue is. And they have to work alongside with someone, the surrogate, because sometimes, many times, talk therapy just isn't enough. So you could be working with your therapist and talking and sharing all your feelings and getting all the feedback. You could be watching all the videos. You could be reading all the books and listening to the tapes and everything. But sex is tactile. It's something we learn by doing. So unless you are sitting with somebody, getting hands-on experience and getting feedback through that hands-on experience, it's really difficult to actually learn the skills to overcome the concerns that you have.
And so when y'all actually get to going to a client's home or partaking in this, what are some of the methods you use to help clients through whatever their issue is?
Okay. So surrogate partner therapy works in a triadic model. So I would work
for
with
the math challenge people, that's three?
Three, okay. Yes. I'm just going to explain because I'm math challenged. Yeah. I recently did a podcast and I was explaining the triadic model between myself and the therapist and the client. And she said, okay, yourself and the therapist, who's the third person? The client.
<Yeah. laughs>
It's three. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so three of us work together. And most of my clients, nearly all of my clients, come to me as referred to by their therapist. If they find me first, then I refer them to a therapist that is accustomed to working with surrogates. Mm-hmm. So they go to their therapist and their therapist gives me a call and we get together and we all meet together in the therapist office. And because that's a good neutral ground where the client is comfortable. The therapist can gauge how the two of us, the client and I, are interacting together, if we're going to be a good fit together, you know, if it's not too awkward. And that's our first meeting. And then from there, the client will begin the process of meeting with me, usually a day, unless they're here for an intensive, they fly in for an intensive, but usually they would meet with me for a couple hours and we would begin with touching exercises, which would begin with simple eye gazing, holding hands. My clients that come to me that are older virgins, 50s, 60s, 70s years old that are virgins, the oldest I had was 78. By virgin, I could be the first person in their adult life whose hand they've held.
Wow.
So, you know, it's something to be handled with a lot of care and sacredness. So they'll work with me for a couple hours and then they go back and see their therapist later in the week and see their therapist for an hour or so and process the work that we did. And then therapist and I will talk about highlights and challenges, etc. And then they'll come back and see me. And then I will call the therapist, tell them what we did. And then they'll go back and see their therapist and process. And
oh, so it's a very group
it's a
effort.
Very, very team effort. Yes. Yes. To get them going for everything.
And so what are some of the challenges that may arise in the early stages of this kind of partnership?
A lot of times challenges that arise are that the client comes to me believing that they have issues around their sexuality, which usually they do. They have issues around their sexuality, again, because of either delayed experience in their sexual awakening, whether it's being a virgin, maybe they've been sexless in their marriage for the last 25 years, maybe they just had a recent disability that changes the way their whole body reacts, maybe they're transgender and they have new genitalia that they're not really sure how to touch or enjoy or incorporate into their sexual life. So challenges that usually arise from any number of those tend to be around accepting themselves for where they're at. Mm. So where they come to me saying, like, I need help around the sex, they want to get right to the point. As we go through the exercises, usually at some point they will grieve probably 3 or 4 sessions in and realize that what they've been missing to get to that point, that the actual sex is the least of it.
And stemming from somewhere else.
It's stemming from somewhere else, yeah. Whereas they would not have realized that had they not begun touching and actually like waking up those other parts of their body.
That's really interesting. Do you find that the issues you deal with your clients are more physical or emotional?
Emotional. Mm. Yeah, it's like it's showing up physically because of a lack of emotional. Like that emotional bucket just hasn't been full.
And as the surrogate part of the threesome of sorts, is it your place to help them work through that emotionally, or is that more the therapist's area to talk about trauma?
Both. And my role, because it comes up as we're working together, so to hold that space then, and then to refer that back to the therapist so that when they meet with the therapist knows that, hey, this is what came up. There's more going on there. Need to dig a little deeper and see what's going on. But again, a lot of those things don't come up in just regular talk therapy. But when somebody is being touched that hasn't been touched in a long time, or touching that has never touched before, they're opening up a whole world of vulnerability that they have never experienced. And that wakes up a whole lot of other things. So,
hey, can you give us some examples of like the intimacy or the issues that you work through with your clients?
Yeah, usually, like I said, people come to me thinking that they need help with their sex and sexuality. Maybe my wife and I have been sexless for 25 years. You would think that that's a wow extreme. From where I sit, that's not that uncommon, unfortunately. Or I was in an accident and now I only get touched for bathing purposes or medical things, but I'm still 35 years old and a sexual being and I don't know how to find pleasure. Interestingly, I had a client once that had been in an acute, he was in a skiing accident, and it was an acute injury, spine down. We were able to redirect his pathway to eroticism and found that we could stroke his thumb in a certain way, and it brought him the feeling of orgasmic pleasure, much like he was able to experience. It took a while, but it was just like, just through different exercises and getting his mind to find that pleasure place.
Yeah, and your mind again is the largest sex organ.
Exactly. And treating his thumb as if it was like a sexual organ, and just really, and he was able to find pleasure in that. So that was cool. Yeah. And I lost track of what your question even was. Sorry about that.
Oh, I was just wondering what kinds of intimacy issues people come to you with. Like, do you deal with a lot of trauma or like sexual abuse?
Yeah, trauma and sexual abuse, both. Unfortunately, too many times, if we're lucky, we get touched a lot when we're children. We get coddled and held and everything when we're little children. The older we get, that gets less and less and less. And then when we become teenagers, if we're lucky, we find healthy ways to discover our sexuality with various partners or exploration and things like that. Too often, people also get sexually exploited during that time, or abused or assaulted. And then we don't actually get back into a life of touching until we meet a mate that we're going to partner with. And then we work to that place and we work up to romantic touching so we can get to the goal of having sex with that person and then partner and marriage and 2.4 kids and the dog and et cetera.
And the white picket fence.
And the white, yeah, exactly. White picket fence. I totally love white picket fence. But, you know, that's if things go according to plan. It really doesn't happen that way for a lot of people. So they feel many times like something is wrong with me. What's wrong with me that I didn't get those steps in my life? When those steps are missed, it kind of just, it stunts our sexual growth. It stunts our intimacy growth. It stunts our growth in how to relate to other people. And then the longer you wait for that in life, the harder it is to get back to it. if you find yourself not pairing well with somebody till you're in your 40s, you're going to be matching up against people that have had several experiences and you've had one or two. And that kind of puts you at a little bit of a
disadvantage
for sure. So then you have the clients that I'm working with that are 50, 60 years old and have never paired with somebody. And it does a real disservice to say, get on Match.com or OkCupid and go meet somebody.
Because people are playing at different rates of experience.
Exactly.
It's a different speed.
And then to tell them to just go practice whatever on some other person, it's not fair to do.
And do you often find, because some of these things are very intense to work through, mm-hmm. do you ever struggle with clients wanting to give up or thinking like they're not making progress quickly enough?
Yes. Actually, nearly every single client will reach a point where they feel like this isn't going anywhere. This isn't going where. I'm wasting my time. I'm wasting my money. And usually it'll start off, yay, this is exciting. And then we do something, whatever exercise it is, where they grieve a little bit. I can't believe that touched me that way. I am feeling terrible that I have to pay somebody to teach me this. What's wrong with me? And then they're like, okay, we're going forward a little bit more. And then it feels stagnant to them again. And just after it starts to feel stagnant is when they reach another hurdle where it's like, whoa, I'm opening up to this erotic world that I didn't know existed. Mm-hmm. And that's because sex surrogacy goes along a path of where we start off with nurturing, building a bond with one another, getting closer, getting more intimate, and then we move into the erotic, much like a regular relationship should, and trying to model that healthy relationship style with somebody. So it's much more than just partnering for the sake of touch. It's surrogate partner therapy, not just the sex aspect.
That's so interesting. So talking about building out this trust and this relationship with a partner, are there certain maybe rules that you follow or that you give yourself with clients?
Such as, what do you mean by that?
Oh, just like, how do you build this trust? Like, is there step by step?
Yeah, well, we start off with every session. We go over what exercises we'll be doing for that day. And we stay within the borders of that exercise. So if we say, today we're going, just for example, we're going to be touching just your back. We're going to be caressing one another, taking turns. I'm going to caress your back for 10 minutes, and then you're going to caress my back for 10 minutes. We make sure that it's only the back and only within that 10-minute time. Many times patients or clients can say, you know, like, oh, that felt really good. I could go farther if I want to, and that's great. I'm so glad you felt so good, but not today.
Yeah, it's establishing those boundaries.
Establishing and teaching from the get-go that we have boundaries and that, and to not to alter those boundaries just because you get feel good brain going, you know, and that's many times we will sit there and go like, but I feel good, so I'm going to change my, no.
And that's a really good point because, you know, I didn't even think of it, but when you're dealing with people who may have never been intimate with anyone before at a certain age, you also have to teach them about consent and how do you go about teaching them like, hey, just because something feels good doesn't mean you can just barrel on through.
Right. Because it would be much better for them to leave the session saying like, oh, I wish we had done more, than to leave the session saying like, that went farther than, you know, afterwards, and having regret and then feeling like they've been taken advantage of in some way. Because in spite of the fact that they get attached or that they begin to, you know, have feelings for me as their partner, it's still my job to hold that container and to hold that place without being clinical about it.
Does that happen often?
Where they get attached? Yes, and I encourage it. It's really important to. Yeah, it's important because it's part of teaching the process of a healthy relationship and to show that it's really important to care and love another human being and to feel safe in that place.
Do you ever develop attachment or feelings for your clients?
Yeah, I do, but I'm able to keep it within that container and in that place. I know that when a client develops feelings for me, it's not me personally that they have those feelings for. It's for that idea person that I've created in that environment for them.
Wow.
And it's for that place that we've created and that safety and that structure. And I mean, they don't know my birthday or what my favorite colors are. You know, they don't know my personal life, really. They just know in that container and in that time.
You guys are together.
Yeah. But for somebody that has never had any of that kind of experience for, yeah, they get attached. And that's okay. Because then when our time together ends, it's a good example to show that, you know, every relationship does end, whether it's by mutual, whether it's one person doesn't, whether it's over death, like whatever, every relationship will end. But to be able to have that end in a very healthy way and then have the therapist also walk them through that and recognize that this is a healthy pattern. You can take these skills now with an actual partner.
Sounds like everyone should have this therapy before they embark on their sex and dating lives.
Is it a concern, though? I'm curious if, you know, you open someone up who maybe really struggled with different factors of intimacy and they create this attachment to you and then it ends. Is there a fear as, you know, a therapist of sorts that this will make them revert back to their old ways and that they'll struggle to open up again in the future?
I haven't encountered that. I haven't encountered that. And I've worked with a lot of different people over the years. And I haven't encountered that. And I think because the triadic model works so well, because it's not just me and the client and we're doing the pseudo thing and then they're off. And it's not just, but they have the therapist who is involved and is overseeing the whole process and is able to keep things in check. And I know very well, too, that the power that I hold when somebody's with me, I have more power to do harm to that person than good if I don't do my job right. So it's very important that I keep things in that container without them feeling like it's this clinical structured container. I still have to be very present and very partner-ish with that person, but still holding that space for that person and still being very caring and just all of it. It's work. Mm-hmm. It's therapy.
How long are sessions usually?
So I do my sessions for 2 hours.
Okay.
I pick 2 hours, feels right to me because, you know, some people will go an hour and a half. Clients will say 2 hours. It feels like such a long time. By the time they go through LA traffic and get to my door and come in and calm down, you know, have a glass of water, some tea or a snack if you want and visit. And then we get to do our touching exercises. And then we come out of that and, you know, relax and prep for getting back out into their daily life world. I'd never want it to feel rushed or like you're just coming to your appointment. You got to get your therapy because, again, it's trying to mimic a relationship, which is why we meet either in my home or their home.
Oh, wow.
So that it can be something, again, that mimics a regular relationship. And it just takes away the stress and the clinicalness of it all. Mm-hmm. It takes away the fear of like, oh, I'm going to see this doctor for this problem. It's like I'm building a relationship with somebody.
And does the relationship always interact within like this controlled setting or do, I'm curious, like have you given clients your personal cell number? Could they contact you off the clock?
Well, all my clients, whether they're sex coaching therapy clients or surrogate partner therapy clients, all have my cell phone number. Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate in the 10 years that I've been working as a sexologist, I've never had anybody abuse that privilege. Mm. I could always just block them if I needed to. But I also, for my surrogate clients, they don't contact me off the clock because of the structure of all of this and because we're creating this boundary, creating consent, creating all that, and the therapist is overseeing it. So that's not something. For my regular therapy clients, off the clock, sometimes they have contacted because crisis comes up, not always Tuesday at 4 o'clock at our set appointment. And they might find themselves like, I just need you to talk me down for 10 minutes from whatever they've got going on. So that's a little different. But surrogate clients, no. And nobody's ever tried either. So they contact me, you know, I'm running a little late or, you know, this came up and I get it.
That's probably a testament to your skill in what you do that you've successfully established these boundaries with them and they respect them.
Well, I hope so. I hope that it's not just because they respect the boundaries with me, but because they are learning skills that they can take forward. Because if I do my job right, I work my way out of a job with this person. So hopefully it's a testament to their skills that they are developing for going forward and learning to be in a relationship with another person.
How long do you typically work with a client?
It depends. So if it is somebody that is doing an intensive, say they're coming in from out of state, they might come in and work for a week and we'll do usually 6 hours in a day.
Oh, wow.
And it would be, you know, 2 hours with me, take a break, maybe see their therapist, another couple hours, or maybe it's just 4 hour days over a week time period and then go back to where they're at, wait 2 or 3 weeks a month and then come back for another week. So that it really varies. We can blueprint it and make whatever works for whatever client. For those clients that live nearby, we can see them sometimes twice weekly, usually once a week. For some people, once a week isn't often enough. And they find themselves struggling, not having, you know, having too much time in between. So they want to see myself and their therapist twice a week. Other people, once a week seeing me, once a week seeing their therapist works. And it just really depends on the client, what they're working through.
Yeah, for how long it will take.
Exactly. And sometimes it could be up to 6 months. The longest I've ever worked with somebody was a couple of years, but they were older virgin, were disabled, and had been sexually traumatized and been taken advantage of through their disability. And that took, we had a lot of different things that we were working on before they got to a place that they were like, I feel healthy and ready to explore.
Wow. It's like almost like I'm imagining like letting a bird fly for the first time, like when it comes to the ending of your therapeutic work with them.
Sometimes they get, some are excited. Some get in relationships right away. I've been invited to a couple different weddings because that's they're amazing. Like, yay, I got, you know, and to see that blossom and go somewhere is amazing. Some leave for a little while, and 6 months later you hear back, they're like, I'm panicking, and you know, I realize that I'm still lacking in whatever area and they need some more help. So it just varies.
Is there a usual age range for your clients?
There's not. I've worked with clients as young as in their younger 20s, mid-20s, and the oldest I've had was in his 80s, was the oldest client I ever worked with.
Because it's interesting, because you think so much about how you normalize things in your life, where it's like, you know, oh, well, we're young, we're developing, something will come. So for our listeners out there who are, you know, thinking like, wow, this sounds really amazing, maybe this is like a service I want to seek out, how would they be able to tell like that the problems they have could benefit from sex surrogacy?
Well, gosh, many problems can benefit through sex surrogacy, because so much of what we do in our life is hands-on. Like if we took as much time teaching our kids about sex and sexuality and how to use your bodies and how they work as we spend on teaching them to drive, like we would have a whole different society.
I love that. Take like a course.
Yes.
Like this is your body.
Yeah. I mean, this is your body head to toe, and it's with you from the moment you're born till you die. And nearly every female that I've worked with has never looked at her genitalia. They just don't. So many men that I work with masturbate without touching their actual skin because there's shame in like actually touching your body in an erotic way. Not because that's the way that gives me pleasure, but because I'm afraid to actually touch it. It's just, yeah, everybody. So many people could benefit. Normally, though, many people just seek us out when they finally get to that point where they're just like, I need help, and I'm ashamed that I need help on this level, and it's embarrassing that I need help on this level, but I'm hoping there's help out for me, because they're not looking for some crazy experience. They're not looking to go out and, you know, conquer the world and be this, you know, swinger of the world or whatever. They just want to be what they feel would be normal and interact with another person in a way that feels good and pleasurable, and have their body respond in a way that feels good and pleasurable.
Are there a lot of misconceptions about what you do? Like that you just jump right to sex?
So people will think that, you know, of course, that it's all about having sex with your clients. Sex is the least of it. Most clients actually don't get to sex.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So they think that, again, you know, they're there to have, learn about their sexuality. Somewhere along the line, we find out what the underlying problem is, why they're not able to have sex. And once we get to that point, they usually come to the place that they're just like, you know what? I want to wait till I meet somebody that makes me feel like I really want to have sex with this person and not have it be my surrogate therapist. And not that there's anything wrong with me, but they are recognizing that that's where they want to be. They want to hold off. And the actual intercourse is the least of it.
It's untangling the emotional stuff underneath.
Yeah. And we have so much that we keep tangled up within ourselves.
Yeah. And just the stigma, especially in America, of seeking out any sort of therapy and help is so intense. So I can only imagine compound, you know, our issues with like identifying and admitting we need mental help with sexual help. Must be a lot.
You know, I got into surrogate partner therapy because I was just doing talk therapy for a while. And just having the sign on my office door that said clinical sexologist, clients had a hard time coming to the door because they're like, oh, I'm going to see that sex person. And I was in a small town up in Northern California, and other colleagues in my building had an issue that was on my door. And I thought that was fascinating because it was one of those buildings downtown where there's like 40 other therapist offices. So if you don't like one, you can knock on the door of another, right? And marriage and family therapists, of course, permeated the building, but marriage and family therapists aren't required to learn about sexuality. Mm. And you're thinking about relationships. And it just fascinated me how many colleagues had an issue with the fact that my sign had something that had the word sex in it. It was, wow, clinical sexologist, yeah.
It's just the fear and the stigma just go so far.
Right. So if professionals have an issue with it, then how are your clients going to have?
I mean, I think sex is a very real, important part of relationships.
Yeah. Every single one of us got here.
Yeah. I'm curious, did any of your
colleagues... That's what I like to say, too.
Yeah. So
it's true. It's like the most natural thing. Or just even your body and your sexuality. It doesn't even have to be like... super sex related or the deed.
Right.
Yeah. the deed.
Did any of, you know, these divorce lawyers or anybody or therapists ever, you know, refer a client to you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's fascinating because over the years, I've noticed the people that have come and given the most like public judgment and stuff many times will be people that message me later and say, so I have a friend or have a question.
It
could be, you know, a year later, it could be 3 or 4 years later, but just, you know, like, hey, we're going through something and I just wondering. And I love that. I mean, even if I can just help in a little email or refer a book or whatever, but people realize that, oh, hey, there is something to this. Like, I do need to connect with another person on more than just, you know, sex.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, this sounds like very emotional work. Mm-hmm. Do you have any sort of personal, like, debriefing thing you do after a session for yourself?
Other than shopping for shoes? I have a really great partner. Mm-hmm. And he also works in the field of service also. He's a healthcare practitioner and runs a clinic. So he's seeing patients all day, and I see surrogate. But there have been many times I'm just like, I had a really full day and just lay my head on his lap and let him pet my hair for a little while and just kind of like, let it go. The therapist that plays the role for the surrogate client is also a really great resource usually for the surrogate. So myself, I can also call a therapist and just be like, wow, that was a really rough session today. And I'm feeling really emotional. You know, these things came up. So yeah, it can get heavy. Mm-hmm. But most of the time it's good. Most of the time it's good. The times that it feels the heaviest are when my clients are grieving and hurting and knowing that having to sit with them in that moment and that we're here in this moment right now and they can't see where it's going yet and they can't see all the positive places that we have ahead of us yet. And it's hard to sit there and hear their hurt that they've had for so many years starting to come out.
I think the triad model is really interesting because I feel like for most therapists, you don't get a chance to talk about your client with someone else and really analyze and debrief the situation. Mm-hmm. So that must be really amazing for both of you.
Yeah, for both of us. It's a good support. And it's a good way because we both see a different side of the client as well and to make sure that the client's really getting the very best care.
Would you like to see that implemented in more mental health services?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Just this idea of like really talking about with another professional.
Yeah. You know, my dad's a vet and he stays at the VA hospital in Salt Lake City every now and then when he has to go in for something. And it's a teaching hospital. One of the things they do there, I would love to see like across the board, all over the place, mental health, everything. But they do their rounds with their students and they have this team of people that go from patient to patient. And they sit there and they go, okay, you're his mental health person. What do you see going on here? Oh, you're, you know, the heart specialist. What do you see going on here? Oh, you've been talking with them about the nutritionist, all the different elements and all their files are together on this one person so that they can really examine the whole picture of the client. And usually the medical person that you see has no idea about the therapist that you see, who has no idea about your exercise habits, who has no idea about your nutritionist, who has no idea. And so we're kind of like picking these little parts, but we don't have a person that sees the whole being of us.
It's so interconnected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I have clients all the time that come and say, like, well, I've been seeing my one therapist for the last 10 years, and I've never talked to them about my sexuality.
Wow.
For 10 years.
That's like
and that's not uncommon. That's not uncommon.
And on that note, how receptive are talk therapists to sex surrogacy as just a mode of healing?
Here in Los Angeles and along the West Coast, Portland, Washington, and Canada, and then again on the East Coast, New Jersey, New York, I've worked with different therapists that have been very open to surrogacy. In the Middle States, not so much. They're afraid that it resembles too much of prostitution, which it does not. I don't know if it's in your stuff there, but I worked professionally at a brothel for a number of years, or for a year. And I can tell you the two are vastly different. And it's sad because there's so many clients that need hands-on help that really don't have another place to get it without somebody sitting with them and working with them and teaching them how to use their body, that they live in this body and they don't even know how to interact with it themselves, let alone another person.
Yeah.
And just talking about it isn't enough. Because you could talk all day about like, oh, go and, you know, touch your hand like this and I can show you and everything. But unless you like practice, I could be like, no, that's not right.
Yeah.
You know, keep trying until you get it right. You need somebody to help guide you through that, to give you encouragement that you're doing it okay, rather than go practice with some stranger from any
Match.com.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you get involved in this line of work?
So I got involved in this, as I said, I worked at a brothel in Nevada, and I was a law student prior to that. I was in law school, and I started working at the brothel just for my own sexual exploration, because it was just kind of fun. And when I was there, I learned so much about people behind closed doors, the things that they reveal about themselves when they know what they're sharing is not going to follow them outside there. There's no way I can trace it back to them or any way. I can't chase them down. And they become very, very vulnerable. And realizing in that world how much actual sex was the least of it and how much people were just looking for a way to explore themselves. Had a number of virgins come through there of all different ages that wanted to, okay, I want to have my first experience, but I don't want to go just learn on some random person that I meet at a bar. Had different disabled people come through there, had elderly people come through. Just learned a lot about people. So when I stopped working there, I went back to law school. My heart just wasn't in it. So that's when I started exploring clinical sexology, because I was like, I need a career in sex education. So there's something to this, what I learned at the brothel. And through that, I found surrogate partner therapy, which was a really great way to get even further into the insight that I had been seeing in different people at the brothel.
Interesting what you said at the brothel and the clients coming through. Mm-hmm. I feel like there is such a misconception.
Oh, completely.
About what type of, specifically men, seek out services from a sex worker. Mm-hmm. And that they have emotional issues and that they just want to, have unattached, maybe even rough sex. You know,
just all
the stigma around it.
And that does happen, but that's really not as common as the guy who is, let's say, going through a divorce and just like, I just want some soft female companionship. And let's go, you know, grab a glass of wine and sit on the porch swing in the back and just let me just talk to somebody and be held while I cry and not be judged. That happens a lot. Or go sit in a hot tub and I can just tell you about my life and share stories that, you know, and have somebody that's present and there with you and attentive. Or just get like a nice back massage that isn't within the restrictions. It's like, it's going to be 50 minutes and I have to have you here and go through this process. But actually, like, I'm enjoying your company and I want to give you a massage because it feels good to you and it feels good to me. And then let's just spoon for a while.
Yeah, I think that's really important for people to hear and be aware of.
Yeah.
I think a lot about how trauma and pain and problems are not very linearly traced. And, you know, sometimes it's not always day and night. I feel like often it's not day and night. So how do you measure success with a client? And how do you know that they're getting better?
Well, first of all, I don't pathologize and say that they're not well to begin with. So how they're improving, getting to a place that they feel comfortable with, they usually let me know. And they let me know by different experiences. You know, they might be like, so I messaged this girl. Maybe they want to get themselves on an online dating and I'll help them and set up a profile for them and we'll take pictures and we'll talk about what looks best. Or maybe they'll want to explore toys. So we'll go on a field trip to like a sex store and look at different toys so it's not intimidating and talk about what the different things are. Or maybe they want to start exploring, you know, making themselves look a certain way or taking care of themselves differently or expressing themselves in a different sexual way. But usually they lead with that. You know, they can start to drop little hints that they're ready to explore something a little more about themselves and to just take that and just be like, well, let's do it. Let's go check it out. Let's, you know, and that they don't have to go alone to do those things is really nice. I had one older gentleman that he had never experienced public displays of affection. And so for him, it was a big deal for our sessions that part of our session, we would go for a walk around the block and just hold hands or put our arm around each other and just be like a normal couple, that he could have that experience of walking around with somebody. And as that became more and more natural for him, then he was able to take that out and meet other people and, you know, have some PDA. So they usually initiate as they get more comfortable.
Mm-hmm. In what they see fit, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you ever had a hard time differentiating your work life from your personal life? Does it ever bleed into it?
No. Mm-mm. I just haven't, because my work life is so, it's just so different. It's just, it's my work life. Yeah. I don't know how else to put it. It's just that it stays within that container. My clients come, we do our work together, and then they leave. And, you know, I check in with my therapist, and then I head to Target and go grocery shopping and just do all the things that you just, you know. Yeah, exactly. All the things that you just do in your life. Yeah.
And you have a partner that you live with. Are you, mm-hmm. you're married?
Yes.
Okay, you're
yes,
married.
Yes, I am married.
Has your work ever been an issue in your relationship?
No.
It's always been supported.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's really amazing.
I know. Yeah. I'm very fortunate that way. So. Yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, what have you learned about intimacy and sex from this line of work?
That's a really good question. I would say the thing that I've probably learned most is that when someone reveals their real sexual self to you, their vulnerability and their fantasies or their wishes or anything of how they see themselves, to metaphorically take off your shoes because you're walking on holy ground. It's a really, really special place to be, that somebody would trust you to that degree. Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
Thank you.
I know. I'm almost like, where do we go from there? Yeah. That was so
thank you.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to know, like, about the training that you took to become one.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And, like, how could our listeners, if someone was like, oh, wow, this sounds like something for me.
So I went through IPSA, the International Professional Surrogates Association, and they are based here in Los Angeles. And they are an organization that has been training surrogates since Masters and Johnson, so for many, many years. I think they're the longest. There's another organization in Texas. I'm really forgetting the name right now. And they're really good as well. So you could, you know, Google surrogate partner training programs. And the training that I had through IPSA was 2 weeks of an intensive. It was like 12 hours a day, 7 days a week for two solid weeks. We lived all of us in a house together. And the process took us through not just as the surrogate partner what we'd be going through, but we had a partner that we worked with through the whole 2 weeks. And we basically did the whole surrogacy process with that person, overseen by the trainer, who was like the triadic model for the therapist. And we played both roles as the surrogate and as the client. So we really have a really good idea what we're putting our clients through as they go through all this. It was probably the most powerful, intense training of any kind I've ever had. And it was very introspective for myself as well. It kind of helped bring up different triggers that I might have for myself, which was really helpful, because that way when I sit across with another person, if they say something like, I already know where I sit with those things, so I don't have to worry about like, oh, how does that fit for me, or work on my own stuff. I can just focus on my client. And then after the 2 week initial training program, they have a mentorship. There's always other surrogates that you can reach out with and talk to if you have any questions about anything. And, you know, which is really good, because there's not a lot of resources out there for us. And there's so much stigma that a lot of people fear what society's going to think. You do what? You know,
is it legal?
It's not illegal.
Okay.
So it's not any type. No, that's fine. But any type of sex work has not been decriminalized unless you're in Nevada at a legal brothel. So because of the triadic model, because it's so well documented, because it's so obviously therapy that is taking place, and it's not just, you know, picking up some guy with a thick wallet and spending a couple hours and sending him on his way, and it's, you're able to document what the client is seeing for. As far as I know, no surrogate has ever been persecuted or tried for any type of work. Still makes some therapists feel uneasy, but it hasn't ever been problematic for anybody that I know that's ever been doing the work.
I almost feel like most therapists should go to this training just to learn, even if they're not going to practice.
Yes.
Just to learn, you know, the emotions that are related to your sexuality and then how your sex life affects your friendships, your career, your motivation.
No, I absolutely agree. Absolutely agree. And to see what it is that your clients are having to go through. You know, it's like, oh, this is a little bit challenging for you and you're a professional. Like, how is it for, you know, somebody that you're, you know, requesting go through something like this?
Yeah, it was absolutely wild that you said that so many, you know, therapists you knew had no formal training in any sort of sexology. When you think about just like, and I think even the therapist would agree on a conversational level that like sex and human sexuality is one of the most important aspects of how we exist and it bleeds into everything. But then to then sit back and then still be like, you know, well, I'm uncomfortable with this or I don't really want to go there is negligent almost, if I can say.
Yeah, you can say that. You can say that because I agree because you're doing a disservice to the client that's sitting across the chair for you. That's not my place to bring my morality or my opinions or how my world works, but I'm here to serve you. Like you've hired me as, you know,
to help you as,
to
best,
help
I
you
can.
As best I can.
Or what's best for you.
Exactly. But therapists, doctors, PAs, NPs, they're not required to take any sexuality training.
Yeah, they only need 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to say it's 8 hours in all of medical school.
Yes.
So that's like 4 years. And then you go on to your years of training, of being in a...
And most patients, before they step or even consider going through my door, have been to their doctor and maybe another doctor and another doctor because something's wrong with me and, you know, not getting the help they need there. Then they're like, oh, okay, well, now I'll go see a therapist. They might see therapist after therapist after therapist. And then they might either have a therapist that suggests surrogate partner therapy or they have Googled my line of work somewhere. By the time they get through my door, they've been seeking help for this for a long time. And by the time they're ready to see me, it's been a lot of like, okay, I'm going to go, I'm not. Okay, I'm going to go, I'm not. Okay, I'm going to, you know, and it takes a long time before they're like, okay, I really am going to walk in the door of this stranger's house and talk to them about sex. We're going to practice touching each other with this person I don't even know because something's wrong with me that I have to hire somebody to help me. So there's a lot that they have to work through before they get to my door.
To keep seeking help and not go anywhere.
And so much stigma with it, which is so sad.
I mean, I can even imagine like something as simple as like erectile dysfunction and going to doctors and them trying to prescribe you a pill or take your blood pressure and it's still not helping, still not going anywhere. So it's just this, it feels very uninformed in this country. Of how our medical system treats these.
Well, just the fact that we call it erectile dysfunction. If you consider the fact that 80%+ of men will encounter, 80% of people with a penis across the board, trans, cis, whatever, will encounter their penis not working when they want to at some point in their life. If the percentage is it really a dysfunction?
Yeah,
I mean, it's
normal.
It's completely normal. So to normalize that and be like, all right, well, so when that happens to you, because it will happen more than likely, like, how do we work around it? How is that okay? And then educating the other side of anybody who may be a partner with that person that, hey, this is normal. It doesn't mean that they don't find you attractive anymore. It doesn't mean they don't like you. It doesn't mean that you smell funny. It doesn't mean like any number of whatever it is that you think is your fault. It's just like, you know what? It's just not up to the task tonight for whatever reason. And that's that. Let's do something else.
Amazing point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you think of one breakthrough moment you've had with a client that is like very close to your heart?
Oh, gosh. I have a lot of breakthrough moments. I can't really think of one particular, but I think that the best breakthrough is, like I said before, when they don't need me anymore. That feels like the best breakthrough.
Yeah.
It feels that I've done my job, not because I don't want to see you anymore, but because I think I'm ready to date on my own now, or I'm ready to go meet a partner on my own now, or I feel really good and I, you know, I'm at peace with the way my body's working and functioning. Like when they don't need me, that feels, I mean, it's like, oh, I'm not going to see you anymore, because you do get attached, but it feels really good. It feels really good to know that they're in a place where they feel they can function in a place that brings them pleasure.
For more content on how sexuality dictates our lives, you can visit us at www.killerandasweetthing.com and follow us on Instagram at birds.bees. You can reach Lori at drloribennettcook@gmail.com. She also leads a group in Los Angeles called Sex Positive LA. You can find out more information on surrogate partner therapy by visiting IPSA, the International Partner Surrogate Association. This is Pillow Talk.